Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
It's those Freedom Fiends, Nima Vedati and Michael W. Dean. How's it going, man?
I am good. This is Michael W. Dean. How are you doing,
Nima Vedati? I'm chilling, man. Waiting on my Vaporsmiths to arrive in the mail. I'm very excited. I've been out for a few days.
That's better than waiting on your welfare check, which apparently is what most of England is doing, according to the interview I did with our British friend.
Kerner?
Yeah, yesterday.
Kerner.
Yeah, Kerner.
Erner.
Rhymes with Erner.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
So what was he saying about everybody being on the dole in England? Do you have any more specifics?
Well, it's a wonderful cast, and people should listen to it at the Anarchy Gumbo. And like any cast with him, there's all sorts of things covered. And, you know, I ask the questions no one will ask.
As you do, like when was the last time you had sex, and was it anal or vaginal?
Yeah, and he's really shy about that. He wouldn't even, I don't even know if he's straight. I don't even know if he's, I don't know. But yeah, he didn't want to talk about his personal life. But he said in England that like 10% of English children today have never seen a parent work.
How many percent?
10. Wow. Right now, the tax rate for rich people is 50%. Jeez. And the current conservative government wants to lower it to 45%, and people are screaming that means they don't care.
Yeah, which is just awful. There was one thing, a good point that Stefan Molyneux brought up recently, that when you talk about cutting a government program, like we're going to cut Head Start, say, for instance, by 20%, people immediately think that there's going to be like 20% less benefits. Like it's just a direct transfer from people to the government to the benefactors. Like there's no waste at all. There's no overhead. There's no fat that can be trimmed. People just, they think that that's how the government works. You know, we give you the money and then you give it directly to the benefactor, but that is not how it works at all.
Well, they also feel like it's been rightfully earned once one Congress or Parliament passes it, and then another tries some austerity to make the math try to work, or not even come close, but try to work a little more than it does, and people scream bloody murder. You know, there's this video that someone just sent us about Nick Hanauer. H-A-N-A-U-E-R.
Did you see it? No, who's Nick Hanauer?
It's a speech that he did at a TED Talk.
Yeah,
you know what a TED Talk is?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with TED Talks. I've seen a few good ones and heard some Liberty people tear apart some bad ones. But it's a really good place to go to see, you know, what the very, I guess affluence not the word, but the movers and shakers in intellectual society are thinking about and talking about.
Yeah, it's like the smartest of the smart who happen to also usually be the richest of the rich. It's Silicon Valley geniuses.
Well, and they also bring people in from other countries, and it's whoever Bill Gates wants to hear talk. Yeah,
I think it's his thing.
At least he usually hosts them and will sometimes give a little introduction of the speaker.
I know it's got something to do with O'Reilly Media, the people who published a couple books that
I've
written.
Maybe they're like a sponsor or something.
Yeah, I think they're a sponsor of it, because I always get their spam since I'm one of their authors, and they send me their author's newsletter, and it's often got TED Talk stuff in it. I mean, it basically goes back to my saying of, you know, in the 60s, or when I was a little kid, you know, 60s, early 70s, I wanted to be a scientist, and whenever someone said, well, that's what they say, I thought they was the scientists.
Like, and what will they come up with next? It sounds like the scientists.
Yeah, exactly. I pictured scientists as like the nobility, like the learned gentry who would lead us into a new millennium. And in a lot of ways they have, but I guess the thing that it comes down to is people can be really smart and still be really dumb. And this Nick Hanauer guy really proves it. He goes on this tear of like why it's sociologically and societally important to raise taxes on the rich. And here's the thing that's really funny is TED Talks doesn't broadcast everything they do, or they have like they do many talks a week and they don't all go onto their webpage or their TV outlet or whatever their top tier of like their favorite people are, you know, because they have so many. And this guy didn't make it to their top tier. You know, his talk didn't get featured, and he put this talk on YouTube himself afterwards saying that he'd been censored by right-wing conspiracy inside TED. And I'm like, first of all, they're all liberals. And second of all, you know, and TED Talks gave an official response basically saying it wasn't good enough. You know, it had nothing to do with the content. And I looked at it and it wasn't, because usually it's like brilliant scientists and social scientists talking about visions for the future. And this guy was just, I mean, he sounded like someone on Hardball, you know, he was just an angry liberal saying we need to tax people more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've featured many things that are far more liberal, like the guy who says we need to, you know, have the world leaders steal a bunch of money and open a bank account for $100 for every child on the planet. They featured that one, you know, but this guy was just an angry blowhard. And then he said, I'm being censored. And his I'm being censored video went viral. And it's just
complete. What do you mean
crap.
His I'm being censored? Like he did another video where he was complaining about being censored. Is this separate from the TED Talk?
Yeah. He did like a vlog, you know, like on his own YouTube channel.
Which is basically just him crying about the fact that he wasn't good enough to make the cut for TED Talks.
It's just him in his mother's bedroom, his mother's basement, screaming into his laptop's eye camera.
Well, the way I've heard it is a lot of times people can be like trained monkeys. You can be very good at doing the task that you were trained to do, like the best. But that doesn't mean you're good at critical thinking. That doesn't mean you're a free thinker. I mean, you could be one of the best thinkers in your field of physics or something like that. But if you're trained to use all that knowledge to build drones and your check comes from the government.
I mean, you know, the best scientists in the world build the murder machines. And when the morality of it breaks their brain, you know, like it did with Ben Stone, they have to stop doing it.
Which, you know, I would venture to say that that's probably rare too. I mean, I bet a lot of them are just so buried in their work. It's like they can't see the forest from the trees.
That's Ben Stone. Doesn't that sound like
Ben
a porn star?
From Bang Brothers. That cliche, can't see the forest from the trees. I got to actually see
trees.
I went to visit Mount Rainier a couple weekends ago, and it was literally like that. Like, there were trees, like huge trees, like few hundred feet tall, thousands of years old, you know, 6 feet in diameter. And when they're so big like that, you literally can only like see a couple trees at a time. You like, you don't see the forest. And so I guess that's sort of where it comes from. And I never really thought of that. I always just thought it was sort of a meaningless cliche, but it's true.
Well, this episode is called Something is Very Wrong with the World.
Really? I didn't know. That's news to me, Michael.
Well, you never react that much to my titles. You just kind of go,
because you always change them.
But you sounded amused by that one. What's your response? What are you responding to?
I guess everybody feels that way. I mean, do you know one person in your life that you've met that thinks, man, this is such a great world we live in. Nothing needs to change. I mean,
no, like even my liberal hippie sisters, you know, and what they think's wrong with the world is that the Democrats haven't gone far enough and haven't stolen enough money to give everybody a pony.
Because that's what they wanted when they were kids. They wanted Barack Obama to give them a pony.
I don't want to pick on my sisters, but, you know, that kind of those people, they're more complex than that. I paint them sometimes as cardboard hippies or something, but they're not. Yeah. But yeah, something is very wrong with the world. I realize it sums up every word I've ever uttered in podcasting, writing, and music, and it sums up my whole life even before I was libertarian. You know, like when I was doing my sex podcast, it was like I was making the point that there's something wrong with the world that BDSM is looked at as weird, so I'm going to shove it down the inner tubes as fast as I can so people can have, if they want, I'm not shoving down their throat, but they can have a look at it and think otherwise. You know, when I was a kid, I was like, there's something wrong with the world and I want to be a scientist so I can change it. You know, I wanted to be a scientist until I started masturbating, and then I wanted to be a rock star.
So you started thinking about getting pussy. You're like, scientists don't get that getting much puss. Gotta be a rock star.
Well, the thing is, I got laid from playing music before I could even play music. Like, when I was 14, I started playing guitar. I got one for Christmas when I was, 13. By the time I was 14, and it was summer, like 6 months later, I would go sit out in the park. I didn't really know three chords. I knew about 2.5 chords, and I'd go out and play, and pretty girls would come up and talk to me, and I ended up the first time I had sex, it was a girl I met because she came up to me because I was playing guitar.
Acting's what always got me pussy. Like when I was in high school,
pussy. What? Mew. Pussy.
We can
mew.
Say pussy. That's not a cuss word if you mean it as a vagina, is it?
Okay. Mew. I'm not censoring you. I'm just saying mew. You just scratched my crazy cat spot. Oh, Charlie has one. We never found it. Charlie, the old cat, but she has one that she licks and then bites.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice.
So anyway,
acting got me laid. Like, people think of drama nerds or whatever, but I was like a really good actor in high school, and I was.
And all the other guys on the
most
gay.
Of them were, or at least
I almost said on the acting team.
At least they were questionable, you know, like some of them were like ostensibly straight, but we always wondered. But I was just like, yeah, look at me, chicks, feel my pecs, watch me hump things, think I'm awesome. And I think most of the girls that I ended up being intimate with were chicks that were, you know, either in that squad or watched me on stage and got all moist from it.
Yeah, I could tell you're an actor. You're really good. You have a really good presence. You're really, really smooth, like on the camera and even on the mic. You know, like I listened to my Anarchy Gumbo podcast and I'm like, I'm kind of amazed that it's as popular as it is because I stutter and stammer and go, and like, you know, but I don't know. There's some magic about it where I just like get stuff out of people that other people don't, probably because I ask them about sex and, you know,
you're like Oprah, man. You get them to open up. You're just sort of, you know, you're comforting.
I get them to Oprah up. Yeah. I mean, I can act when I have to.
Like when you were Dan Banning in the Guns N' Weed movie.
One of the most quoted lines again and again and again from the Guns N' Weed movie is, on your knees, you dirty hippie. But it worked. But I kind of play, I'm kind of over the top when I'm acting. And I can only play roles that are over the top. You can play like the calm news guy and it works. Although you were
news guy. That wasn't really acting. That was just me being me.
I'm not a news guy. I just
Although
well on
Johnny
TV.
Patel was acting. I was never really good at the Indian accent.
That was. But. Oh, but everybody, I mean, a guy from India thought you were Indian.
So kudos. That's great for me.
Yeah.
Now at my tech support job, I always get transfers from the outsourcers who are often from India. Sometimes they're like from the Philippines or South Africa. But they're so funny sometimes, and I just feel weird getting the calls from them. One of the things I've noticed is that outsourcers, whenever they transfer to me, they always overuse like words, like as fill words. Like unfortunately is one of the most common ones. The other day I got a transfer, and they were using the word unfortunately a lot, and in some really weird places. Like the person transferring the call to me was like, and unfortunately the customer's name is Jane. And I was like, really? That is so unfortunate that she was named Jane.
It's like when they take, when they learn English, they find a 5-syllable word they can pronounce and they want to use it a lot because it'll make them sound smart in another language, they think.
I suppose. And I guess I'm not hating because, I mean, that'd be freaking tough,
much
man.
Indian, how much Punjab
exactly.
Can you speak,
and I've had calls where I'm actually helping people from India. So it's like role reversal. And we can have a really hard time understanding each other. And here's the other thing about India is, you know, English is the lingua franca. Like most people in India speak English. You know, it's just a different feeling of English. It's a very tough accent to get past. And
it's because it was beaten into them for so long.
England. Because of the English occupation of India. I mean, how ballsy is that of an empire to subjugate a whole subcontinent of like more people than could ever even fit on your tiny little island west of Europe?
Did you know that during that occupation, they had Muslims and Christians and Hindus from India like fighting together? And the Muslims freaked out when they found out that the guns the English were giving them were lubricated with hog fat.
Oh, huh. No, I didn't. That's interesting.
DJ told me that. DJ knows so many weird historical facts.
Freedom beans.
So anyway, back to Nick Houser and TED Talk, and then we'll move on. I guess the takeaway is it's amazing how smart people can be so dumb.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've never – I used to have a problem meshing that in my head till I started thinking of the trained monkey analogy. Like they're very specific in what they do. So they're smart in the sense that they're educated, not necessarily smart in the sense that they're independent thinkers or critical thinkers or even what we learned in J school called lateral thinking, to where you don't think in a straight line but you try to think of all the different effects. You know, sort of seeing the unseen, which was taught to us in J school. Of course, when you get out in the real world, news directors don't necessarily push that on you. I guess another difference between what you learn in school isn't necessarily how the real world works. So maybe the old model of training people that way isn't really working.
So I want to talk about my fabulous new computer.
Back to gear, I guess.
Yeah, and I want to talk about how much I love the internet, because the last computer I bought, I went into like Office Depot and bought it, and the salesman like followed me around the store trying to upsell me, and I did not want – I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted a computer and a mouse, and I wanted a specific computer and a specific mouse, and then I did not want Norton antivirus. I had that already. You know, I have a license for three computers. I didn't want this. I didn't want Microsoft Office. I didn't want that. And this guy just kept bugging me. And I ordered this new computer, this bitchin' desktop, on Newegg. And when I went to check out, it went to a page that said, "Would you like to buy?" And it had a list of all that other crap. And it said, yes or no.
Yeah.
You know, you could tick any one of them or you could hit no. And I just hit no. And it was like so much easier to dispatch the e-salesman than the actual
completely.
Salesman.
Yeah, and I found that when I was in the market for my laptop, which I also really love and I bought recently, you know, I would go into Best Buy every other day just because it's near my work.
I'd go
look at them, and often, you know, when I'd ask the salesman, hey, do you have a computer with this, this, and this, and this? Well, they would know it. They wouldn't have it. You know, they'd be like, oh, well, we don't have anything with USB 3 and 8 gigs of RAM. Or, you know, we do, but it's $2,500. But, you know, when you can look on the internet and you can pick and choose from a, you know, a smorgasbord of different options.
Here's what I got. I got an Asus, A-S-U-S, Pegasus. It's the end of the word Pegasus. It's Asus. I got an Asus CM6870-US-3AB desktop PC, 3.4 gigahertz quad-core i7 processor, 16 gigs of RAM, and 2 terabyte hard drive.
2 terabyte hard drive, that's bitchin'.
Yeah, that doesn't really matter that much to me because I use an external drive for a lot of stuff. I mean, my last computer, I had 2 years, and it had like a 7, it had like a 1 gig hard drive, and I didn't even half fill it. And that was with making the Guns and Weed movie, you know? Although that was all the media for that was on an external eSATA drive. And I've just ordered a USB 3 drive, which is 10 times faster than USB 2 and about 85% as fast as eSATA, but not many computers have eSATA.
Mine actually, I wanted to make sure I got the USB 3, although I haven't bought any devices that use it yet, but
I'm sending you one.
I'm sending you an eSATA drive.
I've got one port
that's really awesome. It's USB 2 / eSATA, so it's shaped where it'll accept either. Kind of like the ports on my...
It's a bisexual port.
Yeah. Well, it's a bestial port, because it'll accept male inputs from different
other species. Yes.
It's kind of like my audio mixer. It'll take a quarter-inch inputs or also XLR.
Yeah, those are weird.
It's pretty
ones.
Cool, though.
So, I mean, basically, I'm making this video series called Gun Training and the Non-Aggression Principle, which combines two of my favorite things. And I had this gun trainer come down from Sundance, which is not where the film festival is. It's where the Sundance Kid was based, which is why the film festival is named after, because Robert Redford started it. Sundance, Wyoming, which is, you know, hole in the wall gang, all that stuff, cowboy days. But he came down and spent 3 days in my house, and we went out and filmed. We filmed all day, every day for 3 days. And then I started editing the video. On the computer we made Guns and Weed on, but I just went, this is so slow. It's only got 4 gigs of RAM and a 2.9 megahertz dual-core processor. So I just bit the bullet and spent – it was only $900 for this computer, which I looked at stuff with these stats 2 years ago when we started making Guns and Weed. And, you know, it was like $5,000 then for these stats.
It's Moore's Law, baby.
Yeah. So I got this computer and I am just blown away at how pleasant 16 gigs of RAM makes everything. I'm outputting a DVD right now using Adobe Encore from Adobe Premiere, and it takes about 45 minutes to output a really good looking 95-minute movie.
Which is super beneficial for the way you work. I remember when we were working on Guns and Weed, the way you do it is you outputted like 40 something DVDs.
33. Well, there were 9 that I wouldn't even call rough cuts. They were like assembly cuts. But then when I got to the point of rough cuts, cut 33 is the one we released. So there 33 plus 9, 42.
Which I think is a really good system. Yeah. It was a lot of work then, because it'd take you like 12 hours to cook a DVD. But the way it was beneficial was we could actually watch what the end user would see. You know, people aren't going to see something encoded on the computer running off of something with a bunch of RAM. People are going to buy the DVD and they're going to see it, you know, in DVD form. Or, you know, actually these days they're probably going to go to YouTube and watch it on YouTube. But either way, it's better to see what it looks like from the user's standpoint than from the editor's standpoint, because there can be a lot of difference.
Yeah. And when I make the DVDs, you know, I don't do all the menus or everything. I just put one picture up and just put a play button. But actually doing it the way I do it, like the way I edit is for a DVD, I don't make one long project. I make like 7 or 8 or 12 or 16 projects, like how many chapters there's going to be. You know, and that kind of changes as I'm going too. I have to move that around and combine stuff. But that makes it a lot easier to open something up and work on it, and easier to save it and easier to output it. And it doesn't crash as much. I mean, I started doing that because I was on low-powered computers. But even with this fast computer, I'm going to do it that way. I've only got 7 chapters in this DVD. Like, I don't even render. With this computer, I don't even have to render to see previews. I can see previews of them in low res. And I can see, you know, with my old computer, I mean, we couldn't even watch video. We had to kind of, like, scrub it and watch it like a slideshow and turn off the video, and really we edited a lot of that movie just looking at the audio and then we turn the video on and turn it off. I haven't turned the video off once on this. It plays in real time,
which is really the way it's supposed to work. I mean, every editing suite I've worked at when I was in news, you know, that's how it worked, because you couldn't have a situation. I mean, you have to edit a story in an hour, 2 hours tops. So you have to be able to see the video in real time. But you were telling me it was a setting that we could have actually done it on your old computer.
Yeah. Well, it was partly a setting too. It was on the old one. As soon as I got it, I opened it up and like the default in Premiere is quarter resolution view, which probably would have played in real time on that computer too. But I turned it off for some reason. I went to like full frame preview, which is a mistake, and I didn't realize it till I installed Premiere on this computer, and it, like, I opened it up, and it was instantly playing, but it was kind of low res, and I was like, oh, yeah. But even so, I mean, the fact that this can, you know, also, it can view effects in real time, which the other one couldn't have, no matter what, and it can output a DVD in 45 minutes. Then it takes me, you know, 10 minutes to make the DVD and 10 more minutes to output it, but it takes, like, an hour to make a DVD, where it took like 12 hours on that other computer, you know, or 8 hours. It took overnight.
So that's a big win for Liberty. Going to be a lot more video coming out from MWD.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths. At Vaporsmiths.com. Check out the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night. The Anarchy Gumbo podcast. A tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah, I didn't have the big money for the fast computer that TV stations have. And, you know, some would say, well, that's the free market. They're doing what they do and they earned it and they deserve it. And I say they don't, because what they do for a living is enforced statism.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, their license and the reason that they basically have a government set up monopoly on the spectrum, and they have to be licensed with the FCC. So without the government, I mean, they wouldn't really have the market position that they do have.
Right. Right. Yeah, because as my new article proves, make a Liberty radio station for $250 proves, which is on Freedom Fiends. You know, if someone wants to ignore the licensing, for not a lot of money, they can cover their town with radio. And it's actually not that much more to do pirate TV. Or I don't want to say pirate because that's breaking the law. But in countries where, you know, where there isn't that kind of law, people do pirate TV. You know, the kind of transmitter that I'm talking about in there, the one that's $250, if you get the antenna up high enough, it can cover 4 or 5 miles. There are like island nations where they get a transmitter that's not much bigger than that, and they are, you know, without even having a license, they are the station for the country. There's actually like a rum ad that's kind of like one of those. It's like some Jamaican island and it's some dudes in their radio station. You ever seen that one?
No, I don't think I have.
And they show the outside of it. It's like some little cement hut on the beach. And the implication, I think, is it's not a legit radio, not a government legit radio station.
Yeah, yeah. But who needs the government, man? Also, from what I remember, a lot of stations, at least smaller market stations, don't necessarily turn a profit from their news outfit. I mean, they have to pay so many reporters, they have to pay anchors, they have to buy a bunch of equipment, but they do get special benefits for having a news station, because they can say it's a public service, the FCC cuts them some sort of regulatory breaks, and I think they might even get some kind of tax incentives to do it too. I don't know all the ins and outs, I'm not a CPA or, you know, somebody who actually deals on the business side of things, but I remember when I worked in Wyoming, the consensus among us was, you know, he's not making money off of us, we're some kind of public service to people.
Well, which again is why I go back to fiends should go to their local cable company and say, I want to start a public access show, and they should put Freedom Fiends audio with a still video up, and I will help people do that if they're willing to do
it. Yeah. I mean, turn the rules of the state against them. I think that's a really good idea. You know, Ben Stone sometimes goes on rants where he's saying, you know, we can't fight the government on their battlefield, on their terms, i.e. using violence, shooting down drones, making a last stand for the line in the sand and being better riflemen or whatever the case is. That's not where we're likely to be successful. You know, an old theory in war is you fight on your terms. You get the state, you attack the state where they're weak, where they don't expect the attack. And so they're not expecting something like this, you know, public access. They think they set that up, you know, as a public service to us. That's not necessarily something they're viewing as a weak point. So if we attack them from there, they're not expecting it. It's a weak, it's a chink in the armor.
Yeah. And it was put in by some congressman back in the day in the 70s when they started cable TV, when it was only in one or two cities and they needed a law because it was going to grow. So some congressman said, well, okay, let's put this in the bill of if you're going to dig up people's streets and be messing with the public commons, they have to get something back for it because you're a for-profit company. So what you have to do is you have to have one channel where anyone can walk in off the street and get a show. And it used to be to do that, you know, before computers, it's like you had to go there and use their facility and you had to rent the room to do it. And it was like, you know, $50 an hour or $50 for 4 hours or something back when $50 is a lot of money. But now you just bring them a DVD. You know, you have to go, you'll probably have to go to one orientation class and you'll probably have to you will have to fill out a bunch of paperwork. I did it in LA. My one in LA wasn't anything political. It was art. It was like I just took stills of my cats and put my weird instrumental music behind it. it was called Stink Fight Radio on TV.
Nice. It was the pre-internet cat porn.
Yeah, although the internet existed then, but it was pretty fun.
How long ago was it?
Not that long, like 2006. I did it in Agoura Hills and Calabasas. It covered Agoura Hills, Calabasas, and Malibu Creek area, like where the MASH, you know, up in the hills where they film MASH.
Ah, okay.
So Radar O'Reilly was probably watching Stink Fight Radio on TV.
Who was?
Radar O'Reilly.
Who's
from
that?
MASH. You don't know MASH? Ugh. Everyone just went, you don't know MASH.
Man, I'm 28. How am I supposed to know MASH? It was on Nick at Night when I was growing up, and I never watched Nick at Night.
Well, it was an anti-war, really kind of lefty-oriented, but good anti-war comedy. It was based on a movie. There was a movie, and then they made a TV show. It took place in the Korean War, and it starred a pacifist doctor who just, you know, to keep from going crazy, he and his buddies would just do pranks and jokes all the time. Ah. The interesting thing about that show is the show actually lasted longer than the Korean War it was based on.
Except the Korean War, isn't it technically still going on?
It's still kind of going on. I know. Like, literally, like, didn't they not ever end it?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they have the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone. And according to that movie we watched, there's 2 million, or at least that's the official estimate. I don't know if it's true. But the North Koreans supposedly have 2 million troops lined up ready to invade South Korea through invasion tunnels. And, you know, the Americans still keep troops in there. We've still got troops that we dispatch to South Korea to help them defend their little tiny bit of peninsula.
I have more to say about North Korea. I've been doing more research.
Yeah, you sent me a link to their official internet.
Did you see it?
Yeah. The design wasn't actually that bad. It's better than some sites I've seen.
Well, no, because what they do in North Korea is the best and brightest go to special schools and then end up being state monkeys, like state web designers or state musicians or state scientists or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
In that documentary, that journalist from Vice magazine was taken to one of those schools, and they kind of portrayed it like all our schools are like this. They're all polite and geniuses, but no, it was the pre-college for the geniuses who are going to work for the state. Mm. And literally, like, they don't have a choice. You know, you can't say, well, thanks for giving me all this trigonometry training. I'm 18 now. I'm going to go start a business. No. Mm. But most people in North Korea don't know the internet exists, first of all.
Wow.
You know, it's not, I mean, like, we've joked on here before, like, well, you know, there are varying levels of freedom. I mean, we complain about America, but in North Korea, an hour of doing this podcast and they would kick in our door, shoot us, and bill our families for the bullets. But that's not even the case because we couldn't even physically do this in North Korea. Yeah. First of all, most people don't know the internet exists. The only people that surf the web there are high-level party officials. Second of all, to have a phone line in your home in North Korea is like getting a concealed carry permit in America in a May issue state. Mm. You have to apply for a phone, say why you need it, say how you're going to pay for it, and then wait many months before they approve it or not approve it.
Wow.
Thirdly, there is one internet cafe in the country, and it is not really the internet. It is a censored intranet that's like, you know, on a server in that country. Mm. And they have an official state website that I sent you. They have an English version of it. And it's like, there's three kinds of articles on there. Our glorious leader is wonderful and he's given a bunch of toys to children. That's one kind of article. Two is America are Satan articles. And three is South Korea are Satan articles. That's the whole thing.
Wow. There was videos on there too. And I really wanted to click on the links and watch them, but I was at work when I was looking at it. I bet the videos are a fun watch of some nice North Korean propaganda as well.
Yeah.
Although maybe we should ask them if they want to trade links.
Oh my God. That would probably get a knock at our door from the State Department. You know, not, they wouldn't drag us away. They'd just probably knock on our door and say, why?
We just send them a sample of us complaining about the American government. And they'd be like, okay, thumbs up. Yeah. Americans talking bad about America.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No. All right. It's worth a shot.
Maybe. Well, you know, it's like Russia TV. I mean, if we get big enough, they'll probably offer us a show, but they're not going to let us bash Russia on there like we do on here.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
I mean, really, you think about it, like Adam versus the Man show on there. Did you ever hear him bash Russia? No, he just bashed America.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So, yeah, and the other thing about Russia TV is, you know, I like it. I think it's a great concept, and I think the people that work for it are pretty good at what they do, because at least they get to criticize the government in ways that, you know, you can't if you work on CNN. But, and I'm not sure how this works. Are they for profit, or are they like a jobs program from
state.
Russia?
It's a state propaganda thing.
So all of their funds,
it's
also
part of
come
the Kremlin.
Money.
The Kremlin, literally, it's the Kremlin.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So it's like Air America and the yeah. propaganda we have in the Middle East and that we used to have in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, that we violate the laws of various countries to broadcast it over the borders into.
Yeah.
Tyranny in your neck of the woods got you yowling. Tell the Freedom Fiends about it at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Oh, in North Korea, it's illegal to own a radio receiver.
Ugh.
And it's a capital offense.
What?
If you're caught listening. And the same with TVs. You're allowed to own a TV, but the TVs, there's no cable. It's all over the air. And inside each TV, there's a potentiometer that you could turn to get, like, Chinese broadcasts, which they don't let you get because, like, to them, Chinese TV is freedom propaganda.
Yeah.
Because it's so much more free. So you can only watch the three state sanctioned North Korean stations. First of all, most people don't have electricity 24 hours a day there. Second of all, you can have a TV, but you can't watch anything but the three channels. And inside the TV, if you take it apart with a screwdriver, there's a little switch in there that would allow you to see all the other channels, but it's covered with a sticker, an official government sticker.
And do not remove that, under penalty of law, like the thing on your
of
mattress?
Death. Penalty of death. Yeah. Ah. The mattress thing is a joke, because really that's only for the seller. Yeah. Once you buy it, you could take that off.
Right,
so
right.
Any mattress police skits you've seen on Saturday Night Live are jokes.
Oh, yeah,
but
I know that. But
this is real, and they have neighborhood party, you know, they have one party there, and they have party block captains, and one of the jobs of the party block captain is once a year to go into people's homes and peer into the back of their TV with a flashlight
and see if, the
and see if that sticker's
there.
Been. Yeah.
Wow. Well, here's what I'm wondering then. Is there a mass exodus, or has there been a mass exodus from North Korea? And if not, what's preventing that? Is it that
some
China's not giving people visas?
Well,
or what's
first
going
of all,
on?
It's the DMZ. It's like people who try get shot.
But what about the northern border with China?
Well, I think there's some soldiers there too, Nima.
Well, yeah, but I mean that's
like
in the movie
Berlin,
we watched. That's how they got in. They went.
It's like the Berlin Wall, and I wanted to do a whole episode on the Berlin Wall at some point because I was really intrigued by reading about it. I've seen it. I've been there. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of interesting. First of all, in North Korea, if you escape, and people have escaped, if you escape, they shoot your family or they throw your family in a concentration, you know, work camp.
They take your family hostage, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. But people have escaped. There's a documentary of someone who escaped, and a lot, some of it was shot in there, in the country, on a cell phone, and then some of it shot once they got out. I don't know what it's called. We should look that
up. Yeah, and I think there was a book written. Like, I think it was a woman wrote some book about her experiences growing up in North Korea, and then she somehow escaped and wrote a book about it. It might be the same documentary. I don't know.
Well, you know, something I've been meaning to talk about is that I forget the guy's name, but there's a dissident from China who is in America, is trying to get in America. He tried to get on a plane with Hillary Clinton to come back.
You're talking about the blind lawyer or the barefoot lawyer?
Yeah, barefoot lawyer. Now, he's been covered to death. I don't really need to cover him, but I was intrigued by the concept of barefoot lawyer, which isn't being covered much. He is what's called a barefoot lawyer, which is basically in China, you can learn the law and charge money to act as a lawyer for people. And they're called barefoot lawyers. There's also barefoot doctors, mm-hmm. which were – they don't have so many now. But, you know, under Mao, there were barefoot doctors who were people that would travel the country giving medical services in exchange for a chicken or your daughter or whatever.
Your daughter?
You know, when they didn't have doctors or enough doctors.
Right.
So barefoot lawyer – it's interesting that in a country that's so repressed, there are things that are freer. Like you can practice law without a degree and it's up to the free market. If you can do it, mm-hmm. people will hire you. And generally, the barefoot lawyers take cases that licensed lawyers wouldn't take because they'd get in trouble for it, like political dissidents.
Yeah.
In that country, a political dissident is like, you know, someone who doesn't want to abort their second child or something.
Right.
Because the state tells them to. But another thing, too, in North Korea, there's 99% literacy, which I think is debatable because how do you get in there to verify it, you know?
But yeah, that's the thing about statist regimes like that. How can you ever really believe any of the statistics one way or the other?
But a fact about that country that's interesting is as of a couple years ago, North Korea has no income tax. Now, that sounds like, ooh, freedom, but it's not. It's more like the tax is ostensibly 100% because they own everything.
Right.
They own every job, every place you'd work, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Mm. Shuddering, man. Makes me shudder.
But barefoot lawyers. And, you know, I knew someone who lived in Vietnam, an English woman who lived in Vietnam and still lives there. And I talked to her a bunch and she said that, you know, in Vietnam, they will kill you by firing squad, not only for possession of a gun, but for possession of one bullet. But in that country, if you want to start a business, you just hang up a shingle on your house, you know, or your hut, and you start a business. And there's like no startup paperwork and there's no regulation. If you want to if you have the best rice and you want to sell it in your neighborhood, you put up a sign and sell rice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Which you can't do here. I mean, you can't start a lemonade stand here if you're a 12-year-old girl.
They'll point guns at you and take your lemonade.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know why that is. I guess my initial instinct is it's a cultural thing. I mean, from what I read about the barefoot lawyers is it's been a practice that's been around for centuries, and it's just something that's sort of always been around. So something like that, it's hard for the state to say, well, we're going to take this away, or, you know, it's something that they probably just ignore and let happen anyway. You know, America,
worms,
as it stands now, doesn't have, you know, tons of centuries or millennia of culture behind it. I mean, we sort of started as a government. And
well, there's barefoot lawyers here, but only in prison. You know, there's jailhouse lawyers. There are guys in prison
that spend their time reading law books instead of bench pressing.
And they help other guys, mm-hmm. you know, write pleadings and write, you know, requests for retrials or whatever. And sometimes it works. I guess in that movie, Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne was a jailhouse accountant, but he was a banker in the outside world, but he was filing all the taxes for all the cops inside the jail. And that's how he got special perks.
Wow. Yeah. Man.
You know, he probably wasn't a certified accountant. He couldn't have done tax prep on the outside world, but he was a banker, so he knew how to do tax prep.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie. I don't remember why he went to prison. Was it a white collar crime? No, it was murder,
well,
wasn't it?
That he
didn't do.
It was murder was the case, but he didn't do it. It was he came in on his wife screwing another man. He knew it was happening. He knew they were cheating. It was at his, I think, the other guy's house or something. And he went there with a little snub nosed revolver to kill them. And he was really drunk and he's sitting in his car, but he didn't kill him. He looked in through the window and then he split and threw the gun in the river. But somebody else broke in and to rob them and murdered them I think raped the woman, but I know murdered them. And they found the gun with his fingerprints on it and his tire tracks and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, the state has to put someone away.
Lesson there is don't throw your revolver away.
Or throw it away somewhere it can't be found.
Yeah, yeah.
Like on like in some murder mystery I saw, it was a guy wiped the prints off, it took the gun apart, and threw the went to a truck stop and threw the pieces on the top of like 10 different trucks that were all bound to different states. Mm.
See, now that's smart. I feel that way about all sorts of evidence. Break it into pieces and put it in different places.
Yeah, I think it's going to get to the point with spy drones where there'll be no way to like drive anywhere and hide anything.
Mm, not just spy drones, but the black boxes too.
Yeah, what's that? Oh, on the cars?
Yeah, on the cars that are, I think, now mandated for 2016, something like that. I think it's only mandated that they be built into the new cars. But, you know, as we're seeing now with drones, it's always a slow progression to the inevitability. So, you know, we first saw drones, flying robots killing people overseas. Now, slowly, you know, different law enforcement agencies got them. Then it's going to be weaponizing them. Then, like you say, Michael, eventually it'll be that they use the weapons in America for somebody like a child molester. And this is just sort of how the state works. So once you see them start doing something, it's not saying, oh, well, you know, at least it's only mandated for cars built after 2016. Yeah, now. But a few years after that, then it's going to be mandated for all cars. There might be a few cars that are, you know, grandfathered in, but eventually it'll be that it's illegal. You know, you can't have a car unless it has one of these. And then they don't even need a drone. Then they just track you with GPS 24/7.
Yeah. You know, I was reading about internet in North Korea. This is actually how I found some of this was they called it something like a black box internet, you know, is some word, walled garden, which is a term for any system that is nothing goes in or out. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at walled garden for technology, like America Online was considered a walled garden. Like they didn't want you to, at first you couldn't email outside of AOL accounts.
Really?
And, you know, they tried to keep you in and that's part of why they went out of business. Interesting. Facebook is a walled garden because it's a web community that you can't see anything on it without being a member. So Facebook is the same kind of website as North Korea's internet.
Tired of the false economy? Want to carry real money in a form that people will dig getting? Don't Tread on Meme now has Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed silver dime cards. Collect all four. Trade them with your friends. Freedom Fiends silver dime cards are also great for starting conversations with statists about liberty. Go to freedomfiends.com today and click the link at the top that says Silver Dime Cards. That's freedomfiends.com.
Have you been looking for a safe, scenic, and inspiring place to live free? We chose Wyoming. Wyoming is the home of Free State Wyoming and the personal choice of Boston Tea Party, as well as the setting of his book, Moulin LaBaye. Bring the family and stop by for the 2012 Free State Wyoming Jamboree for 4 days of camping, shooting, and barbecue. There'll be trading, hiking, a raffle, and plenty of activities for the kids. Admission is free for those under 18. Entrance and 4 days camping is $15. It's only $15 more for the barbecue and beer on Saturday. Visit freestatewyoming.org. There's even a one-day handgun course led by Boston. The handgun course is extra. The Jamboree is June 28th through July 1st in the beautiful Black Hills of Wyoming. Join us to explore our favorite area of the country and see if our choice might become your choice. That's freestatewyoming.org. See you there! Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Rolling.
I counted down 3, 2, 1, and then cleared my throat.
Then you hawked a loogie,
really,
it sounded like. But
I didn't record it.
Okay, fair enough. News of the obvious. Don't ever set your beer on your electronic equipment because you may spill it.
Yeah. I heard you cussing.
Yeah, I did. I was going outside and I rested my beer on one of my turntables and it tipped over. So I had to run and grab a rag and wipe it down real quick. It was just a splash and it just sort of touched the RCA input. So I just wiped it off and I won't turn it on for like a week so it dries out. Should be fine.
So speaking of gear, I guess this is the gear episode. This is a... Here's the secret I'll tell now that we're halfway through it. We recorded this 2 weeks ago. We recorded this on May 30th. It was one in the can for Nima to, because he's going to be moving this week when this releases. He'll be on the road.
Yeah.
So if any highwaymen want to rob him, he's armed. Don't.
State is the biggest highwayman, and I would not fight back against them.
Well, they own the highways.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course they are. So I'm actually, speaking of gear, I have 3 computers open. I decided I'm going to do that from now on when we podcast, because usually I'm recording on my desktop and then I can't surf the web and look things up like the word walled garden. And a lot of times, you know, in previous casts, I'm like, well, I don't know. I can't look it up right now. You look it up. But now I can look it up. I just have to have 3 computers running, one for looking stuff up. One for Skyping you and one for recording you.
Well, can't you look stuff up on the one you Skype on? That's what I do.
Nah, well, maybe. I don't know. That one's little and it's like over in the corner.
Oh, that's your little netbook thing. Your mini pooters,
you call
it.
It doesn't surf very fast. Mm-hmm. But so now what I'm doing on my surfing computer is I'm going to show how badass I am, and I'm actually going to author a DVD while we're doing this podcast.
Challenge accepted. Michael Dean. Yes. Making DVDs while he podcasts.
Jared 4.
Very nice. Right. Well, I had a little non-gear topic to go back to our previous conversation when we were talking about the internet in uber status societies. I actually had a Facebook conversation the other day with one of my Facebook friends. I didn't really know who he was, but he has the same last name as me. So sometimes I like to chat with people who have the same last name as me because there's very few that I know of in the world.
They're probably related.
Yeah, he was related. He was like, I'm your cousin from Iran. And I was like, oh, awesome. Where are you at? You know, just automatically assuming that he's somewhere in the States or England.
No, it was probably some guy from the Central Scrutinizer Department of the Fed Goons Incorporated trying to get you to do something.
Maybe, but he was a clever one then because he knew, you know, my family's hometown and all sorts of stuff. So he seemed to check out and he just wanted to chat with me over video because we haven't seen each other and we're cousins. And it was an amazing thing. We wanted to do a video chat through Facebook, but it kept not letting us. I don't know if it was a technical thing or if it's a, you know, a firewall in Iran or what it was, but he seemed to think that it was going to work. It just didn't.
Did you turn him on to Freedom Fiends?
I did, yeah. So he said he wanted to see me, and I was like, yeah, I want to see you too, but since we can't get the video chat, here's a bunch of my videos. So I sent him Freedom Fiends, Guns and Weed. I sent him a few of the less lame news pieces that I did when I worked in Wyoming. I sent him my music video, I Own Me. So hopefully he doesn't get a knock on his door from the morality police there in Iran. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty interesting thing. And he was like, you know, you should come visit. I'm like, yeah, I definitely want to. I've always wanted to. And I was like, maybe I should visit and see if I can get them to let me open carry and shoot a documentary about it. Now, I know that's a pie in the sky fantasy, but I like to have fantasies like that.
I refuse it. I won't let you. I'm not letting you go to Iran.
Not letting me go?
I mean, I can't not let you go, but I feel really strongly about you not going. I don't think you'll come back. I think they'll put you in the army. I think your dad's right. Your dad's from there, and he says they'll put you in the army.
Yeah, he says they'll put me in the army. Although you can pay to get out of it. So unlike the American draft, well, I guess in the American draft you could get out of it a few different ways. But in Iran, I think you can pay not a stipend, but you can pay ransom money basically and not go to the military.
You could get out if you're a fortunate son. Do you know that reference?
It's a song, yeah.
Really?
Along the
you know
Watchtower.
That song?
Yeah, man, I've seen Forrest Gump.
No, it's not All Along the Watchtower. It's the song Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival.
That's it.
It says, okay. I ain't no fortunate son, I ain't no senator's son. It's about having to go to the draft. Look at George Bush. What did he do? He was in the National Guard during Vietnam.
Yeah, or Mitt Romney or Dick Cheney. Mitt Romney protested for the draft while he was dodging it.
Yeah.
What a douche.
What did his sign say? Other people should go die, but not me?
No, his sign was really hilarious, but I forgot what it was. Google image it. You'll see a picture of a young Mitt Romney holding up a sign protesting people dodging the draft while he was dodging it. The ultimate political thing, you know, being the ultimate hypocrite there, Mitt Romney. What a douche. I think I was listening to Scott Horton. He was saying, you know, all these people that are cheerleading for the war, I think what we should do is we should send the bomber over there, but have them be the bombs. Let's just drop Charles Krautheimer.
Who said this? Who said
this? Scott Horton. Let's just drop Charles Krautheimer on a bunch of citizens in Iraq or whatever.
I'm searching for the picture of Mitt with his sign, but since it's become a meme, all the signs are altered to say other things.
Okay. Yep. That's the
make war, but just send the poor. I'd rather shit than fight.
Yeah, man. Don't vote, man. Voting's lame.
Daddy said, this is one with a woman next to Romney. This is a woman that says, her sign says, Daddy says you can't marry a dead trust fund baby for his money. It's like Romney and all his friends. One says, more troops in Vietnam, more me in France.
Nice.
I really like this thing that Reagan said. I hate Reagan, but he said some really funny things. He said, yes, and I went by and there were these young people protesting and they had signs that said, make love, not war. And they didn't look like they were capable of either.
Nice dig at hippies there.
I know.
Yeah.
They can't or kill. Damn them.
I would much rather than kill, though. Oh, are we not supposed to be cussing? I don't remember.
I'd rather fucking be able to kill if I have to.
Yeah. I think you're a more moral person if you have the ability to kill and don't do it. We've talked about this before.
Ben Stone has turned me into a complete gun-toting pacifist. I mean, I was a gun-toting angry guy before, and now I'm a gun-toting pacifist, which is not to say I'm not going to shoot in self-defense, but, you know, I no longer have any fantasy. I mean, I never had a fantasy of, you know, going against the government, but I had a fantasy of, like, people say that they're going to do that and, you know, like maybe giving them, not even giving them support in my mind, but just like thinking an American Revolution 2 were possible. And now I'm completely convinced it's not, and it's not even the way to think or go or be.
Yeah. Well, when I think of it, I don't think of like some kind of organized resistance or uprising. I just think, you know, if the did hit the fan, it'd be nice to have guns so you could maybe hunt for your own food or protect yourselves against the Mad Max gangs or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I'm not thinking of, you know, we join a militia and then we fight against the state's militia or army and then we win and then there's libertarian paradise that we fought through.
No,
arms.
There isn't. It'd be replaced with Santorum as president.
Yeah, it'd be Santorum paradise. You
know, the new occupied states of America starring Rick Santorum, especially this part of the country, man. Do you think the square states like Wyoming and Utah and Idaho and Montana, do you think they'd let a libertarian paradise take over?
No way.
Man. They'd take everybody who's in prison for drugs and machine gun them.
Yeah.
First act of business.
Well, not only that, but I mean, can you really even have a society that is prepared for something like libertarian paradise if they've won it through force? I mean, doesn't that legitimize the use of force for your ends? Which isn't that the opposite?
I don't know. I mean, I really think the American Revolution was valid and could have gone a different way. You know, if they hadn't immediately made such a state.
If somebody would have assassinated George Washington so there'd be no rebellion.
I'm serious. If they here's the minarchist in me sneaking out again. But I wish that they'd started a state that had castle doctrine, you know. I mean, I think things would be different. History would be a lot more interesting.
It would be, but you know, again, you go back to the point of you can't really have a state at all, because no matter what you do, if you have that idea that there's these group of people or there's this system of choosing a group of people even that has control, that has the monopoly of force, no matter how small that monopoly is, no matter how small the sphere is, it's going to inevitably grow. As long as you have that seed, the plant is going to grow, or the weed is going to grow in this case.
Yeah. I'm authoring a DVD right now.
Nice.
I really am. Nice. It's awesome. I'm so badass, man. I really am.
It should be called the Michael Dean is Badass podcast.
Well, that's Anarchy Gumbo.
Oh, right.
Actually, it was Clone the Homeless, which isn't around anymore, and I don't think you can even find any of it. Well, Submission and Coffee is pretty badass, too, because it had audio recordings of me having sex with two women at once sometimes, so... That's I sent one to you and you blushed. You were like, I don't need to hear this. I sent you like 10 seconds of it and you opened your Bible for comfort.
That's not what I did.
No, you were like, ew, old people doing it.
I was.
I'm glad it's audio only.
I used it though. I what I did was I pitch shifted it so I wouldn't be thinking of you guys having sex.
Oh, it's in the Freedom Fix.
It's in the Freedom Fix. Yeah,
I'll insert
I pitch shifted it so that it wouldn't sound like you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Using technology to my benefit. Freedom Fix. Freedom Fix. Freedom Fix. Yeah, Freedom Fix, baby.
So when we were doing our sound check, my sound check was blah, 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 the government, blah, 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 cats, blah, 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 the government, blah, 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 cats. And you liked that.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. That should be a song. Blah, 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 the government.
Kind of my whole life right there.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I used to hate cats, man. When I was a kid, I was a dog person only. I hated cats.
Oh.
But I always felt slighted that you actually had to put in work to get a cat to like you. I was like, man, my dog will just always want pets from me, but my cat, I like have to treat him right or he'll run away. And I felt so entitled to the cat's love, like, because I was a statist when I was a kid in some ways, and that's one of the examples of it.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms. Well, my at this point on pass 4, DVD 4, output 4 of the Jared gun training video, it's 1 hour and 39 minutes long. That's pretty good. Reasonable length.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all good. It's all really good stuff.
Very beneficial. I've got a gear tip that I've been learning recently. I guess I always sort of knew this. It's just I'm lazy about it sometimes. Exactly. But if you're doing multi-track mixing on a song, make sure you EQ before you compress.
Oh, yeah. And make sure you EQ, even with single track or stereo track stuff, make sure you EQ before you normalize.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you do it afterwards, then whatever you EQ up is going to be above the baseline, so it's going to clip.
Yeah. Well, normalization contains some compression. Normalization is a combination of compression, limiting, and like some kind of dynamic change.
Yeah, yeah. But at any rate, I guess the idea, the concept is that you're limiting, your compression, you're normalizing, whatever you use at the end, that should be at the end of the chain, even if you're multi-tracking. Because I've been multi-tracking things, and I was like, man, how come I can never get the kick drum or the bass drum to sound as loud as I want it to without clipping? And it's because I was EQing it after compression. And I guess I sort of always knew that, but I've just been realizing it more and more to get your kicks to sound louder. EQ the bass way the F up. A little bit of the mids down, keep the high about flat. At least that's what I do. Then I compress it after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Worms. I'm making a DVD. You know, when I was like looking for jobs, you know, before I started making a living doing what I did, and I used to go work in offices and like write my novel at the office because I got so good at doing, you know, that I could do an 8-hour day of administrative assistant work while writing my novel. I could do the day's work in about 4 hours, and I was just, you know, mm-hmm. spread out throughout the day. So I would have 10 minutes, 20 minutes here at a time. I have a tip for anyone doing that, though, is use some sort of removable hard drive. So if you get fired, you can leave with it.
Yeah.
Or periodically email it to yourself. There's also a trick for going from one screen to another when you're, and I wouldn't say this is stealing time from your boss, because if you're doing the work you're supposed to do, you know, you can do something in your downtime, but, Alt and Tab will go from one window to another. So, you know, if you hear your boss's footsteps coming up, you can hit Alt and Tab. Or is it Control and Tab? Let me see. I have to open another window. And you could go from, you know, surfing the web or writing your novel in Word to back to the Excel spreadsheet where you're mindlessly entering numbers. Yeah, it's Alt-Tab on a PC.
Okay. Some more news you can use from the fiends, I guess.
Yeah. How to steal time from the man. How to have the glorious workers' revolution one keystroke at a time.
The workers' revolution.
You know, there used to be this magazine in San Francisco, like a print magazine that was done by workers.
The Socialist Worker?
No, I hate that magazine. I especially hate that magazine because the people that edit it would meet at the cafe
uh-huh.
and take over three tables and be really loud and not tip very well. And I'm like, really? The guys who are like, the workers are going to lead the revolution aren't tipping the workers in the coffee shop well?
Well, I've heard some socialists say things like, well, we shouldn't necessarily need to tip because, you know, the only reason tipping exists because their wages aren't high enough, and the minimum wage and the living wage should be high enough to where they can.
So they're being absolutists, not incrementalists. They just say we will starve the workers until they join our revolt.
I've heard it a couple of times. Yeah, I'm not trying to generalize everybody in the socialist movement if they're even.
Well, also Jim Goad said people who say workers of the world unite in America have usually not worked a day in their life.
Well, yeah, but I feel like some of the sense is, you know, you shouldn't have to, it shouldn't be a meritocracy, right? You shouldn't, everybody should have a right to eat all they can eat and to have a comfortable life, and it's the government's job to provide this. And here's the other inconsistency, or the other thing that really irks me about this sort of liberal or progressive idea. A lot of them are always complaining that, you know, corporations are treated like people, and, you know, these big, giant, multi-billion dollar things, they're like people, and that's why it's so bad. And I'm just like, stop treating the government like a god. You know, I don't think that the problem is that the corporations are people. The problem is that you think that the state is this benevolent, godly force that is all powerful and can provide things like healthcare for everybody.
I found it. I searched on Google, magazine in San Francisco by workers written at work, 80s. And it's the second thing that comes up. It was called Processed World. And if you go to processedworld.com, I remember this magazine. Processed World magazine was founded in 1981 by a small group of dissidents, mostly in their 20s, who were then working in San Francisco's financial district. The magazine's creators found themselves using their only marketable skill after years of university education, handling information. In spite of being employed in offices as temps, few really thought of themselves as office workers. More common was the hopeful assertion that they were photographers, writers, artists, dancers, historians, and philosophers. So this magazine was like written and laid out with, you know, I guess stolen or borrowed time at work by workers. It actually, some of these people went on to do Adbusters. Do you know Adbusters?
No. What's Adbusters?
Adbusters is people who are in the advertising world, graphic artists and people like that, who make billboards anonymously and ads in magazines. Sometimes they're published by magazines for free because they dig them, but they make really creative billboards that are really not what generally the status quo wants. I mean, a lot of them are really lefty, but a lot of them are great too. Like one is the American corporate flag. I'm sure you've seen it. It's the American uh-huh. flag. And instead of stars in the stars and stripes,
it's the
stars
logos are of like all the different corporations,
ABC, McDonald's, mm-hmm. MTV, et cetera.
Yeah.
There's something in Fight Club that's a takeoff on Adbusters where they're changing a billboard. You know, before they start blowing things up in the first phase of their fight, you know, after it, Fight Club morphs into like, not terrorism, but graffiti kind of campaign thing before they start blowing stuff up. It's when Bob gets shot by the guard. They're changing. It's a big billboard that says, like, the EPA says, make sure you recycle your used motor oil. And they change it to say, like, the EPA says, did you know that you can use used motor oil to fertilize your lawn? That's totally an Adbusters kind of thing. Although they wouldn't advocate polluting like that, but that's what Adbusters did. Like, they would go alter billboards and things.
Right, right. I had an idea like that the other day of, like, a text message while you drive contest. And it'd be a bunch of different billboards around town. And whoever could drive to them the quickest and text what was on the billboard would win, like, a prize.
I like it. You'd have to do it on private property, and you'd get arrested for doing it, but I still like it.
I just think it's hilarious. I hate the anti-texters and the I hate all the driving busybodies.
I'd like ones that say, do meth. It'll make you young and sexy again.
Yeah. Want to lose 50 pounds in a month? Yeah, yeah. I just feel like, with driving at least, you know, there are people that can, that are race car drivers. You know, they can do turns at like 100 miles an hour. They can do it with motorcycles. They can do amazing things. The human body and mind is capable of such amazing things that it just pisses me off to no end that our roads are always lowest common denominator. Like, why can't we have a system where people can drive at their ability? Like, why do I have to wait at the red light when there's no cars coming just because some 80-year-old can't see more than 100 yards? Why is that on me? I mean, it shouldn't be. I guess Eric Peters recently wrote an article about this, and, you know, the road system should be private. It should be like a racetrack, right, that's owned by a private owner. They could red flag drivers that don't drive well enough and kick them off. And then at the same time, you could have your granny roads, you know, if you really wanted it, if there was enough of demand and granny could actually pay to have her own road. Why not? Have a slow, pokey road and have a road for people who actually know what the hell they're doing.
I'm writing emails.
Michael is stealing time from the fiends.
I am.
We're about to have a fiend revolution. I mutiny, Michael. Oh. I mutiny.
Jack Endino commented on my link. That's the guy who produced all the first Nirvana records. Let's see.
Which, for, like, you talking about Bleach?
Yeah.
Because was it Nevermind, Butch Vig?
Yeah, I'm talking about Bleach. Okay, yeah, Jack Endino engineered Bleach and was the Sub Pop house guy. Yeah. He's a buddy of mine in person and on Facebook. He just commented on the War Prayer post I did.
Oh, nice. What'd he say?
He said, after he died, he said, okay, I'm dead now. I will allow you to publish it. He's funny. He was in a really cool band. God, what were they called?
Yeah. Do you still want to read the War Prayer since we have time?
Sure. Do you have it?
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
Take a break.
And then you pull it up.
Maybe one of us is the narrator and the other one is the priest or something.
No, one of us is the narrator and the other one of us is authoring a DVD.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
So what I was getting to about... Oh, sorry. Rolling. So what I was getting to about back when I worked in offices before I went off on the tangent of how... that magazine became, how Processed World became Adbusters, which was referenced in Fight Club. basically, when I was working in offices, like, I used to make resumes that, like, listed my skills. And it was like, you know, Photoshop, SoundForge, Adobe Premiere, etc. And I always ended up getting jobs doing word processing and, you know, data entry in Excel. Mm. And I really had to quit my job to do what I want to do with all my skills. And now it's like every day I seamlessly go back and forth between, you know, probably 30 or 40 programs in a given day without even thinking about it. It's all just art to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like as far as content production, once you get the basic concepts, I mean, most programs work pretty similarly. Like, you click on things, you add things,
file,
you cut,
edit,
you copy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same concept.
I mean, that's what I really love about Adobe Premiere or, you know, non-linear video editing, because I started editing video on film, you know, on Super 8,
yikes.
which is non-linear, because you can put, you know, clip D between clip A and B. And then I went
to editing.
Are
you talking about actually cutting them? Or?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, cutting and splicing them when I was like 14 or 15, 16 at the church farm school. And then I used to edit at this place called ATA, Artist Television Access in San Francisco, which I've talked about and complained about because they had sold out showings of my first two films and they wouldn't touch Guns and Weed because it mentioned guns. And I did a blog post about how the underground had become the mainstream because they weren't taking things that were controversial.
Yeah.
But what they had there was they had a linear video editing system, which is basically two VCR tape decks controlled by a controller, you know? Mm-hmm. So like you'd lay down clip A, B, D, C, F. And then if you decided you wanted to change something and put it between clip A and B, you couldn't. You had to start over. Mm. That was linear editing. So editing on computers is non-linear editing, which editing with film also was. But the first electronic editing was linear editing, which really sucked. You know, it's the same idea if you took two. I mean, I did this too at home, was take three VCRs.
Three VCRs.
And, you know, use one for the source of one and one for the source of the other and one for the master and just edit clip, 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 clip. And you had to do it in order. But nonlinear video editing, like with Adobe Premiere, is kind of like word processing in 3D to me. You know, it's the same thing. It's cutting, editing, pasting, moving sentences around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's always how I thought of it, too. Not necessarily with word processing, but I remember I was doing some freelance work for a bodybuilder once. He had me make his, you know, routine music, you know, clipping stuff together and making it all, you know, kind of like those routine musics you hear that cheerleaders do or bodybuilders. And he came over to where I was working one day, you know, on his stuff. And he was like, wow, how do you know how to do all this stuff? And I was like, well, I mean, I go to school for making news videos, so this is just the same thing but a lot easier because it's audio only, and it's all just chopping things out, cutting them, changing the speed, using effects, using the right plugins. It's all the same beast. You just got to learn the ins and outs of the different programs.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, I'm working on this gun training video, which is going to be a series, and I think it's going to probably do better than anything I've ever done financially, which I say that about everything, but I think this really could, because, you know, people don't want grand statements of original vision. They want slightly original ways of showing something really cool that they want to know, you know, and that's what this is. Mm-hmm. I was thinking we or you should do a video series for MVD of like, I was going to say of like how to do hip hop, but that's cheesy. I was thinking like how to use a home recording studio. I think that's something we could do, or even you could do, and I could pitch it to MVD.
I think it'd be better though if it were multi-voices. Like, we could go into a few different people's home studios and watch how they do with different genres. Like me, you, maybe Chris Calder. I was looking at some of his videos on YouTube, and he's a pretty amazing guy too, the way he records everything himself and can just pretty much play any instrument. I think that's a great idea. You know, it's something you could buy. I love content like that that's, you know, it's fun to go and fall down the wormholes on YouTube and see the very specific things, but it's also nice to see a general overview. I remember when I was first learning how to make digital music, there was a book called How to DJ Write, and it was...
Was it written by someone named DJ Write?
No, that would have been great, though. No, it was by two club DJs in England, and they broke down the concepts really well. You know, it went in almost a linear fashion of, well, you have to understand this concept before you understand this concept. They had images, you know, diagrams, and it really made me understand the concept of basically digital editing on the fly, which is how I think of DJing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that'd be a good idea to do some kind of video series on that. I don't know It's probably been done before, so we'd have to see what else is out there and see how we could improve upon the design, so to speak. I guess it'd just be cooler, you know, because there's probably stuff out there for people making God music.
Well, interestingly, when somebody really wants to know how to do something, even if they're making God music, they'll look at the heathen's description of it if the heathen's not too filthy. You know? That's been my experience. I mean, $30 for all of my stuff that I've done, it's how to, or even stuff I've done with you that's, you know, why to, like the Guns N' Roses movie and the Freedom Fiends. Uh-huh. You know, I would say 25 to 30% of our fans on all of that are Christian. And, you know, 25% of them are atheists and 25% of them have little or no affiliation or are Quakers or Muslims occasionally.
Yeah. Or half Quaker, half Muslim.
Yeah. So you like that? Not how to. It's why to.
Why to. Yeah, I like that. That could be a nice company name. Why to Media.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we were going to talk about Mark Twain's War Prayer. I guess Jack Endino mentioned something about, yeah, now I'm dead, so you can publish it. and I guess there's truth to that. It looked like he tried to publish it in 1905 in Harper's Bazaar, but they rejected it and said it was not quite suited to a woman's magazine.
And he also had... He had like an exclusive, lifelong exclusive with one publisher.
Right, so he couldn't publish it while he was alive. So he couldn't
publish it as a book, yeah.
Yeah, although he wanted it to. Apparently it remained unpublished until 1923, which I'm guessing was after, well, I know it was after World War One, but maybe part of the impetus was, you know, after.
It was published like 4 months before we went to war in World War Two, I think.
Well, I have it here as being published in 1923. So that would have been...
Then World War One. I don't know. There's something about the timing of it was, you know, if it had been published like 4 months later, they would have dragged... they didn't say this, but, you know, would have exhumed his corpse and tried it for treason or something.
maybe it was after the...
It was after the bombing of the Lusitania.
Lusitania.
Which was, you know, probably an American false flag thing, but was blamed on Germans.
Hmm. Maybe that was another milestone for it. I don't know. I'm not well read on the history of it. But I have, according to what I'm looking at, it was published in 23, which was well before.
Are you looking at the Wikipedia article?
No, maybe I should look at Wiki.
I'm looking at it.
Wiki said it was published. Does it give a year?
It's kind of a weirdly written, like non-encyclopedically written article. It said it was published until blah, 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 and not a moment too soon. That's not how you write for Wikipedia.
No, that's not how you write for Wikipedia.
And they actually say it twice in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, either way, it was published after he died and could have been more relevant, I guess, if it was published at a different time.
Yeah, so go on.
I will go on, and I will read Mark Twain's War Prayer while Michael makes DVDs.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Yep.
All right. Worms. So here it is, the War Prayer.
Here I am. I'm clicking Make Project so people can hear it.
Make movie.
I checked project. Okay, now build. Check project. It checks out. Everything's good. There's no problems.
Internal monologue, Michael.
Build, bitches.
Use your in-brain voices.
My in-brain voice. All right. War Prayer. I make DVD for you.
Yes.
So go ahead, man.
It was a time of great and exulting excitement. The country was up in arms. The war was on. In every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating.
Sound effects in the
background. Yeah, do sound effects. The bands playing, the toy pistols popping, the bunched firecrackers hissing and sputtering. On every hand and far down, the receding and fading spreads of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily, the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue, gay and fine in their new uniforms. The proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly, the packed mass meetings listened, panting to patriot oratory, which stirred the deepest deeps of their hearts, and which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause, the tears running down their cheeks the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to the flag and country and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause, in outpouring of fervid eloquence, which moved every listener. It was indeed a glad and gracious time, and the half-dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straightway got such a stern and angry warning that for their personal safety's sake they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way.
Horizontal enforcement.
Exactly. Sunday morning came. Next day, the battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their faces alight with material dreams. Visions of a stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender. Then, home from the war, bronzed heroes, welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory, with the volunteers sat their dear ones. Proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag, or, failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded. A war chapter from the Old Testament was read. The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building, and with one impulse the house rose with glowing eyes and beating hearts, and poured out that tremendous invocation. God, the all-terrible, thou who ordainest, thunder thy clarion and thy lightning sword. Then came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passion pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benignant father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work, bless them, shield them. His high and mighty hand make them strong and confident, invincible in the bloody onset. Help them to crush the foe. Grant to them in their flag and country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless step up the main aisle, his eyes fixed upon the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cataract to his shoulders, his steamy face unnaturally pale, pale even to ghastliness. With all eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side and stood there, waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued his moving prayer, and at last finished it with words uttered in fervent appeal. Bless our arms, grant us victory, O Lord our Father God, Father and protector of our land and flag. The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to step aside, which the startled minister did, and took his place. During some moments he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes in which burned an uncanny light. Then, in a deep voice, he said,
I come from the throne, bearing a message from Almighty God.
The words smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention.
He has heard the prayer of his servant, your shepherd, and grant it if it shall such be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import, that is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men, in that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. God's servant and yours has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No, it is two. One uttered, the other not. Both have reached the ear of his who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this, keep it in mind. If you beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware, lest without intent you invoke a curse upon a neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain upon your crop which needs it, by that act you are possibly praying for a curse upon some neighbor's crop which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your servant's prayer, the uttered part of it. I am commissioned by God to put into words the other part of it, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly and unthinkingly. God grant that it was so. You heard these words. Grant us the victory, O Lord our God. That is sufficient. The whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. Elaborations were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory, must follow it, cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening spirit of God the Father fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put it into words. Listen. O Lord our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle. Be thou near them. With them in spirit, we also go forth from the sweet place of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale form of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless, with their children to wander unfriended the wastes of their desolate land in rags and hunger and thirst. Sports of the sun, flames of summer, and the icy winds of winter, broken in spirit, worn with travailing, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their better pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, him who is the source of love, and who is ever faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen.
After a pause.
Ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits.
It was believed afterward that the man was a lunatic, because there was no sense in what he said.
And that was The War Prayer, a one-man, one-act play by Nima Vedati. Words written by Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain.
And so, yeah, I mean, beautifully said there. And again, sort of a similar concept to The Seen and Unseen by Frederick Bastiat. If you pray for your soldiers' glory in battle, what you're also praying for is the deaths of the opposing side, the death and destruction and murder of their innocents and the destruction of their town. You're praying for bombs to eviscerate kids when you pray for glory for your own military.
I don't see how mothers can be happy that their kids, A, are going off to war, and B, shooting at other mothers' kids. I could see how men can do it, but women bring life into the world. Like, what switch flicks in their head when pressed with patriotism that makes them do that? And why doesn't that work in me? I mean, I knew war was wrong before I could read, you know?
It's fear, and, man. It's fear. It's the soccer moms being scared. They've been convinced by media and indoctrination that if our sons don't go out and murder these people, then our sons are going to get murdered. So it's like a mama bear thing, I think, that kicks in.
Man, it's evil. Yeah. And it's evil how people pull heartstrings to make people believe that crap. Mark Twain rocks.
He does. The really interesting stuff is, and Scott Horton was also talking about this, you remember Madeleine Albright? She was cornered by a reporter who said, you know, 500,000 Iraqi children have starved to death since Bill Clinton's sanctions. Do you think the price was worth it? And she said with a straight face, yeah, I think the price is worth it. Basically saying that for Bill Clinton's political ends, it was okay for 500,000 kids to die. And, you know, is she a mom? I guess he posed that question. I didn't look it up, but
is she a female?
She's a female. Yeah. It's questionable when you look at her. But it's questionable when you look at her. But, I mean, I guess biologically she is, you know, ostensibly a female. How can she hold that in her mind and in her heart? I mean, what if she had the misfortune to be born in Iraq and was raising a family there and not—
Politicians don't like being cornered, and they're trying to make it illegal. Yeah. You know, recently Ian and some gal in New Hampshire went to a Joe Biden appearance and got in and yelled to him, you know, something like, so are you going to indefinitely detain me for standing up and interrupting this? And they were drowned out by Obama and Biden supporters there who started yelling, yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't know if they even heard the question. They just knew it was somebody rabble rousing. But wow. Are they saying, yes, we can indefinitely detain you?
It's what it sounds like to me. Yeah. Yeah.
Strange times we live in, man. Those planes in 9/11, in 9/11 knocked the Earth off its axis into the bizarre world. Yeah. As Scott Horton
I'm still looking for the wormhole, man. I want to go back to the real world.
Yeah.
Although I don't even know if it ever existed. So
I think we're at the end of our talk here, man. I think it's a good place as any. War is dumb. Worms
and peace.
Peace, literally.